I'm Gabrielle Jackson, and this is The Full Story.
Good evening from Belmont University in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm Kristen Welker of NBC News, and I welcome you to the final 2020 presidential debate between President Donald J. Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden.
We've just had the second and final U.S. presidential debate between Donald Trump and Joe Biden. It was a calmer, but no less divisive debate. Guardian columnist Jonathan Friedland was watching the debate with US correspondent Richard Wolff, and they sat down to analyse what happened. Today, the competing visions of Donald Trump and Joe Biden. It's Friday, the 23rd of October.
It's debate night once again, or debate morning, depending on where you are in the world. Donald Trump and Joe Biden have just finished off their final duel before the US presidential election as we speak. The stage was set in Nashville, Tennessee, and many wondered, hoped, maybe prayed that this would be a kinder, gentler, more civilized approach to debating in comparison to the chaos fest many of us endured first time around 3 weeks ago. But is that how it panned out? With me to talk through it all and pore over it, once again, is my very brilliant colleague across the Atlantic, fellow Guardian columnist, Richard Wolff. Richard, the big question was this calmer, more civilized, more of a debate than we had last time? What do you think?
Well, it was, no question about it, but Donald Trump couldn't quite keep it in for that long. I clocked it about 25 minutes before the dam burst and the polite facade dropped. And I think there were a number of occasions when the old familiar Donald Trump poked through. But, you know, his general problem, not just in the debate, but throughout his whole presidency, has been about consistency. And to the extent that he was better than he was the first time around, yes, there was an improvement for Donald Trump. But Joe Biden was also better. The question is, was Trump good enough? Was he consistent at all? And I think on most measures, when you're losing an election, as Donald Trump is right now, you need to do a whole lot better than just slightly better than the train wreck you did last time around.
Yeah, that is the thing with these debates, isn't it? That if you are the one who's lagging behind, you need a game-changing event. You have to see something that upends the race. And I was looking all the way through the 90 minutes, or in fact 90 plus minutes, because it did run over time. I was waiting for that standout moment that actually, you know, famously it was Ronald Reagan in 1980, where they also debated just before the election, where he turns to Jimmy Carter more or less as
there you go again.
And, you know, lands this moment which somehow crystallizes all the doubts people have about his opponent. I didn't see a single sort of defining moment like that, even though I'm with you. Over the course of the 90 minutes, he was stronger, he was more focused, he was more coherent than he was last time.
Yeah, there wasn't that moment for him, and there were significant problems for Trump. Most of all, he can't express empathy. He is physically incapable of doing so. You know, when the conversation turned, for instance, to fixing healthcare, we're in the middle of a pandemic that has killed more than 200,000 Americans. And very quickly, Donald Trump started talking about...
Mr. President, I have to move on to the next question.
They said the stock market will boom if I'm elected. If he's elected, the stock market will crash.
Okay, I'm making money from Wall Street, and how he could make more money from Wall Street than Joe Biden did. And Joe Biden had made money, and he could... And you start to wonder, you know, how much effort is it for him to even begin to express empathy? Because he can't even get to the second line of an argument about it. We saw that again when it came to discussions about kids who've been separated from their parents at the border.
We now have as strong a border as we've ever had. We're over 400 miles of brand new wall. You see the numbers. And
again, about racial justice. Empathy was sorely lacking from this president. So for his own supporters and for people leaning that way, I think, you know, there was no turn off, and they might have thought, well, he landed some punches. But I think for anyone looking for a president who, you know, typically the pollsters talk about, do you care about people like me? And this president really, really struggles. It almost seems it's like a physiological thing.
Yeah, and what's so interesting is that's true anyway, but he's up against somebody in Joe Biden whose strongest suit, actually, is empathy. That's where I think people who are Biden supporters would have felt most confident during the debate, is in those moments. You mentioned child separation, which is, you could feel the moral outrage from Joe Biden.
And guess what? They cannot, it's not coyotes didn't bring them over. Their parents were with them. They got separated from their parents. And it makes us a laughing stock and violates every notion of who we are as a nation.
And just nothing like it coming from Donald Trump.
They are so well taken care of. They're in facilities that were so clean.
But some of them.
The thing I was wondering about was on your point about COVID, though, here was the worry I would have if I was in Team Biden, which is, did not the kind of lines of a clear choice emerge there, which was Donald Trump as the advocate of a strategy for coronavirus, which is get the economy open again. We can't hide away. We've got to learn to live with this virus.
You can't do this. We can't keep this country closed. This is a massive country with a massive economy. People are losing their jobs.
I wondered if there was such a clear division there. It wasn't just, you know, I have empathy and I'm talking about injecting bleach. It was Trump will get the economy back up and running again and kind of whatever the risk, and Joe Biden is going to close things down. Yes, maybe you'll be safer, but the economy could shrivel. And I wondered if that clarity of choice could play for some people for Trump.
Yeah, I think there is a clarity of choice there, but it's not something that's new. In fact, you could see it from the moment they walked on stage. Joe Biden walks on stage with a mask on, takes it off fairly dramatically, waves it around at a certain point early in the debate. Of course, Trump doesn't wear a mask, hasn't worn masks, and obviously got infected with COVID. So, you know, the choice has been there all along, pretending like the pandemic is just going away and sort of bumbling through it and saying, well, some people die and some people get better, and then taking it seriously and listening to the science. Remember, in recent days, Donald Trump has tried to say that listening to the scientists is some kind of knock on Joe Biden. So I think the choice is pretty clear. You know, if anyone thinks that this approach, Trump's approach to the pandemic, is working, then I guess their vote is clear. But the problem Trump has is that the vast majority of Americans do not believe it's working. And when you get infected yourself with all the protections that the president has, it's not exactly credible that this is a viable strategy for most Americans. So, you know, if this was a winning position that Trump was in, then holding this ground would be great for him. The problem is he's really holding on to a losing proposition. And that's where he needed to change things tonight. And of course, he can't change because he's Donald Trump.
When you and I spoke after their first encounter, it feels like a different age. It was before Trump had been diagnosed with coronavirus. So many things have happened since. But back then, we talked about how there is a gladiatorial aspect to these contests, and people do want to see their candidate, or even the candidates, if they're undecided, you know, take on and slap down in some ways their opponent. And I was struck how actually Joe Biden, who, you know, despite being this more kind of a figure of, you know, bipartisan amity historically, he did do that a few times. There were some very strong moments, I thought, when he, you know, when Trump was going after him for his position on Medicare and trying to tie him to the positions of, for example, Bernie Sanders.
He's a very confused guy. He thinks he's running against somebody else. He's running against Joe Biden. I beat all those.
Joe Biden said he seems confused. He's running against Joe Biden. I beat those other guys. That seemed quite sort of tough to me, that line where he talked about Trump cozying up to Kim Jong-un and said,
what does he do? He embraces guys like the thugs like in North Korea and the Chinese president.
That man's a thug, and repeated it, a thug. And I just thought that actually Biden, you know, he's often portrayed as a bit doddery and sort of missing a step. And maybe he is past his absolute prime, but he did manage to land a few blows, I thought then. What did you think on that, just on the sort of pugilism of a contest like this?
I do believe that both candidates performed better than they did in the last debate. And that was certainly true for Joe Biden. He was much more on his game. Yes, he delivered some one-liners. He He even parried the attacks that, you know, Trump, if Trump had one purpose tonight, it was to inject into the mainstream the widely considered disinformation about Hunter Biden's alleged laptop and all the purported scandals that flow from that, which has been a constant diet on Fox News that everyone else has treated with exactly the kind of radioactive gloves that it deserves. He constantly pushed that at Joe Biden, and Joe Biden took it in his stride, pushed back against it. And the more scurrilous stuff about, you know, Joe Biden's made tons of money from Russia, as if, you know, Donald Trump has never sought any kind of business deal with either Russia or China. So I thought Biden's performance generally was stronger. Yes, there were those moments when I think Democrats could rally around him and say, you know, good for Joe. But that dynamic, again, a sort of more traditional debate dynamic where, you know, it's tied on points, just doesn't help you if you're Donald Trump and you're 10 points down nationally and 8 points down in the critical swing states. So on that basis, a tie on points is actually a win for Joe Biden.
And tie on points, is that how you would decide it if you were arbitrating this one?
No, I wouldn't actually. Context is everything. And there are late breaking voters. We saw that very dramatically in 2016. To a large degree, Donald Trump's case was that Joe Biden's just another politician.
Just a typical politician when I see that.
Let's talk about
North
Korea.
I'm not a typical politician.
Okay,
that's why I got elected.
He fundamentally doesn't understand that as an incumbent, you can't still pretend to be an outsider. And so I think Trump's premise was wrong. Beyond the sort of the quality of the performance, the fundamental argument about why vote for me, why not vote for the other guy, wasn't prosecuted. Regardless of whether they were better or worse compared to their own previous performance, you have to compare them to each other. One campaign has an argument and the other one really doesn't.
It's quite right that it sounds, in a way, ridiculous to be talking about Joe Biden as if he's a politician and I, the President of the United States, am not. And yet a little voice in me does remember how, you know, Margaret Thatcher was 10 years in power and was still talking about the government to do this, meaning not her. And she would criticize, you know, the government and the way the country was run. And some politicians are able to pull that off. And I did wonder about this way that Trump constantly hammered that Joe Biden had 47 years to fix this, 8 years in office. It wasn't even that long ago, he said.
Why didn't you do it in the 8 years, a short time ago? Why didn't you do it? You just said, I'm going to do that. I'm going to do this.
I did wonder if, you know, it was a weak riposte from Biden when he said,
we had a Republican Congress.
There was a Republican Congress and just let it sit there. Some people said they wondered if their, you know, their internet had gone down. They couldn't, they thought the screen had frozen because Biden didn't say anything else. He just said, you know, there was a Republican Congress. I know that's true. You know that's true. But I wondered if for some people that would sound a bit like an excuse. And that notion that he's been there forever and didn't achieve everything he's talking about now, whether that might land for some people.
Well, you see, Johnny, you're revealing not just your age, but your trauma of watching center-left politicians go down. You know, Thatcher, we are obviously a similar age. Thatcher's arguments resonated because she could constantly refer back to the calamity that was the end of Labour in the late 70s. The calamity of Obama only exists in the fevered imaginations of Fox News hosts and Donald Trump and his supporters. What people will think of now as the calamity is this period, right? It's the pandemic, it's the recession, it's racial justice. And I think it's hard to hark back to the Biden era as being this colossal failure that Biden was uniquely or even collectively responsible for. When you talk to people who've lived their lives in TV, they'll tell you that some of the most effective things you can do is to be quiet. It's funny that, you know, you people notice the quiet more than the noise. And I think Biden's shorter answers that not true and the pauses actually are helpful because that's when people pay attention. And what they're paying attention to is someone who, what they see, if not hear, is someone who's pretty confident. And they don't know the rights and the wrongs.
The one thing I did wonder if whether or not it might have legs was a moment, in fact, there were two bits of this moment, where Joe Biden said something more than he needed to say. He went further than he needed to say, and I thought he may be potentially created a problem for himself, and that was both related to energy. One was a moment on fracking.
I never said I oppose fracking.
You said it on tape.
I did. Show the tape. Put it on your website.
I'll put it on.
Put it on the website. The
fact that where he was very definitive in saying that I have never said I would ban fracking. Go and find the tape. And you'll see that, you know, the right-wing Twitter community has dug up bits of archive already, which they're playing. But then he went further and he said, yeah, we're going to phase out, transition out of oil.
That's maybe the biggest
question.
Statement in terms of business. That's the biggest statement.
Okay.
Because basically what he's saying is he is going to destroy the oil industry. Will you remember?
And you could see Trump thinking, this is great. And he actually, again, breaking the fourth wall, says the quiet part out loud and goes, that's not going to play well in Texas, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, Ohio. He's, you know, and he's sort of preening as he said it, Donald Trump, because he thought, great, this is a gaffe by Trump, by Biden that could make Joe Biden unpopular in those states. What do you think? Will those remarks have legs in states where there are jobs tied to the oil industry?
Not enough. And again, the people who are afraid of people taking action on climate change. Look, Joe Biden has already said he is going to go after climate change and have it, although he's not, he says, a supporter of the Green New Deal. He has a robust plan in terms of investment in alternative energy and, you know, across the board commitment to what they call these green jobs. So I think if you are looking at which candidate is going to support traditional fossil fuel industries and which candidate is going to rejoin Paris, you know where you're going. The problem for Trump is that all of this stuff is peripheral. That it's just not the main subject. It's not the main topic that's driving people in this election on either side.
Let's just get into a couple of more of the substantive stuff before we wrap this up. Healthcare, there was a big chunk on healthcare. You know, it's always going to be advantageous or sort of fertile ground for Democrats. They always historically poll a bit better than Republicans on that sort of question. Joe Biden was very strong on that, but this comeback
under what he wants to do, which will basically be socialized medicine, he won't even have a choice. They want to terminate.
That he's in favor of socialized medicine and Medicare for all, and some people will lose their private plans, which some Americans like. Do you think any of that cut through and wounded Biden tonight?
I think the politics on healthcare has changed, has shifted since actually, you know, Hillary Clinton tried to push this through and it was characterized as socialized healthcare. Obamacare is popular. Getting rid of it has been unpopular. Donald Trump keeps talking about wanting to get rid of it, wanting the new Supreme Court justice and new Supreme Court to do just that. You know, in the middle of a pandemic when healthcare costs have been spiraling out of control and people are struggling financially, I think Joe Biden's position is far more in the mainstream.
What I'm going to do is pass Obamacare with a public option, become Biden care, the public option.
Yes, you can mischaracterize it as socialized medicine. Of course, that was the prime point of conflict in the Democratic primaries, where actually people like Kamala Harris were talking about having just a public option and no private system, actually abolishing private healthcare. Joe Biden didn't take that position. So I think if anyone really wants to get into the weeds of it Biden's position is actually a middle ground. If they are inclined to hate everything that smacks of socialism, they're not going to be considering Democrats anyway.
It is, as you say, a sign in a way of the times that we have not yet talked about the unbelievable serial dishonesty that came from Donald Trump. It happened again in this debate. We've become so used to it. You know, he said that Obama, President Obama, warned him that America was about to go to war with North Korea, which he luckily averted. Not true. Obama never said anything like that to him. He said that his taxes had been pored over by special counsel Robert Mueller. Again, that never happened. And he said he's the greatest president for African Americans, with the possible exception
of Abraham Lincoln. Possible exception, but the exception of Abraham Lincoln. Nobody has done what I've done.
I mean, you know, and that is but the tip of the iceberg. We are a bit normalized by that. You know, we've become a bit inured to it. But, some people would have thought that it's the moderator's job to jump in with fact-checking. The moderator tonight was NBC's Kristen Welker. She didn't do that, and yet she is getting rave reviews for her performance. What do you think?
Kristen Welker, I know very well. I worked with her at NBC. She is a news journalist more than a news reporter, more than a moderator or an interviewer on one of the talk shows. And I think that showed. I think she did a fine job compared to maybe, you know, the way Chris Wallace from Fox News was sort of absent in the debate and lacked control. I think she inserted herself into the debate. My criticism is that I think she was looking for the news edge, and part of the failings of journalists today is that we take whatever the president says or the prime minister says as news because that's what we're trained to do. If someone newsworthy says something, then it's news. And we're challenged if what they say is actually disinformation or a flat-out lie. We still think it's news, and we don't want to challenge it because we're concerned about things like balance or you know, missing something that might be newsworthy. And that allows this current crop of politicians to lie and spread disinformation. And I think she was caught in that. She decided she wasn't going to be a fact checker in that regard and was going to look for a newsy angle. And that allows someone like Donald Trump to spew forth in an unbridled way.
Yeah. I mean, I think I sort of feel for her in a way, because if she did fact check, she'd be doing that all night. Right. There would be nowhere else to go. She wouldn't be able to get onto any other subjects. Joe Biden himself didn't stick wholly to the truth. And that line about saying that he'd never condemned fracking or said he would ban it, I don't think that's true. He did say remarks like that in the primaries, but nevertheless, I don't want to both sides this. The dishonesty is absolutely, the preponderance of it is overwhelmingly on Donald Trump's side. It's him who constantly comes out with these lines. So there were some good closing lines from Joe Biden. I thought his closing remarks saying that, you know, choose science over fiction was a brilliant line written for him, but he delivered it well.
I do. And I'm going to say, as I said at the beginning, what is on the ballot here is the character of this country. Decency, honor, respect, treating people with dignity, making sure that everyone has an even chance. And I'm going to make sure you get that. You haven't been getting it the last 4 years.
Overall, though, it seems like we're both saying that there was, you've talked about, you know, was this a, even if it was a tie on points, I think the consensus between the pair of us is there was no knockout blow. And your view to us said at the beginning of this conversation was a knockout blow was all Donald Trump really was all that was going to kind of rescue Donald Trump at this stage of his campaign. He needed a knockout win, and on balance, you don't think he got it.
Yeah, we're 12 days out, 11 days probably by the time that people hear this, and he's in a losing position across every single data point that's out there. So surviving wasn't good enough for Donald Trump. Marginally better wasn't good enough. And I'm not trying to gloss over Joe Biden's faults. He's not a great debater. He's never been a great presidential candidate. But he's winning, and he continues to be on a winning path after this final debate. There's very, very little that Donald Trump can do right now. You know, all that's left is some Comey-style intervention, deus ex machina, and his own FBI won't do it. So, and even if they do, it will seem like more of the same that we've heard for the last 4 years. So I think Donald Trump is out of Trump cards, and this debate was just not good enough for him, even though it was better.
Richard Wolff, as always, such a pleasure to talk to you in the dead of night here in the UK. It's more or less bedtime, I think, for you in the United States. Thank you for that, as always.
That's it for today. In the coming weeks, we'll have a lot of coverage on the US election that I can't wait for you to hear. This episode first aired on The Guardian UK's Politics Weekly podcast, where Jonathan Friedland is doing a weekly special on the US election. If you liked it, you can find more by searching for Politics Weekly wherever you get your podcasts. This episode was produced by Danielle Stevens. Saturday morning on Full Story, we'll have the third part of our special series, The Wait. See you then.